VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Friedel, Susan Shand, Armin Kasabian, and Jill Robbins. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
China's economy picked up speed in the fourth quarter of 2020 to end the year with a growth rate of 2.3%. The growth could make China the only major economic power to expand following worldwide business shutdowns caused by the coronavirus crisis. Growth in the 3 months ending in December rose to 6.5% over a year earlier, official data released this week showed. The growth was driven in large part by the Chinese public returning to stores, restaurants, and movie theaters. In the first quarter, economic activity fell 6.8% as the ruling Communist Party decided to shut down most of its economy to fight the coronavirus. In the second quarter, China became the first major economy to expand. It reported 3.2% growth during that period. That rate came after officials declared victory over the virus in March and permitted factories, stores, and offices to reopen. Today, restaurants are filling up with people again. So are movie theaters and some major stores. Crowds are still thin at large shopping malls, however, where guards take the temperature of visitors to identify possible coronavirus cases. Tourism within China has also started to come back. However, some Chinese cities are reporting a rise in new infections. Because of this, China's government has urged the public to stay home during the Lunar New Year holiday in February. The Lunar New Year holiday is normally the busiest part of China's travel season. China moved quickly to put public restrictions in place across the country when the virus first appeared. Experts say the action permitted China to largely contain the virus much more quickly than most countries. Another driver of the country's latest economic growth was a boost in exports linked to the demand for Chinese-made face masks and other medical goods during the pandemic. Rajiv Biswas is with the market research company IHS Markit. He said in a report that China's 2020 growth showed clear gains in consumer activity and strong export performance. Biswas added that China is likely to be the only major economy to have growth in 2020. Developed nations and most major developing markets experienced a recession. China's National Bureau of Statistics said in a statement that the economy had recovered steadily. It added that the ruling party's development goals had progressed better than expectations. Even with the fourth quarter rise, China's overall 2.3% rate marked the country's weakest economic expansion in many years. It was well below 1990's 3.9% growth rate following the crackdown on the Tiananmen Square pro-democracy movement the year before. That event left China internationally isolated. I'm Brian Lin.
The 2020 Australian Open was one of the year's few international sporting events not changed by the coronavirus pandemic. The tournament took place in January 2020, before international travel was shut down. The winners were Novak Djokovic and Sofia Kenin. But this year's tournament is already very different. First, it has been delayed by about a month because of travel restrictions related to the pandemic. It is now set to begin on February 8th. Players arrived in Australia recently, and some of them were on an airplane with passengers who tested positive for the coronavirus. Because of this, 72 players are now required to complete a 14-day quarantine and are not even permitted to leave their hotel rooms. One of those players is 2016 champion Angelique Kerber. She recently had to celebrate her birthday in quarantine. In the past, she spent birthdays in Australia celebrating with tournament organizers after her matches. This year, she had to accept a message posted on social media by Australian Open organizers to mark the day. The 72 players restricted to their hotels cannot leave to practice. That means they must try to find ways to stay fit inside their rooms. Some of them are hitting tennis balls against the walls and windows. Other players are facing a different set of restrictions. They are inside a so-called bubble and are permitted to practice outside their rooms for up to 5 hours a day, but they cannot mix with people who are not part of the tournament. In Adelaide, South Australia, players including Serena Williams, Naomi Osaka, Djokovic, and Rafael Nadal are able to play outside. Some of the players stuck inside their rooms have expressed frustration about their situation. They say they were not fully aware of the quarantine rules when they boarded their flights to Australia. Australia has done a much better job of limiting the spread of the coronavirus than many other countries. Aside from an outbreak 3 months ago, the country has kept the number of sick people very low. Just over 900 people have died. Daniel Andrews is head of Australia's Victoria State, where the tournament takes place, in the city of Melbourne. He told the Associated Press, "The country's strong policies will not change just to make famous tennis players feel better."
Hi, there's been a bit of chatter from a number of players about the rules. Well, the rules apply to them as they apply to everybody else. And they were all briefed on that before they came. And that was a condition on which they came.
Australia did, however, decide to open its borders to the tennis players in the first place. About 1,200 people made the trip, including coaches, tournament workers, and media representatives. Three people on a flight from Los Angeles, California to Australia tested positive for the coronavirus. Those people are staying in a special hotel. None of the players have tested positive for the coronavirus since they arrived. Local officials have promised zero tolerance for anyone violating the quarantine rules. That means players are exercising in their hotel rooms until the two-week quarantine ends. Craig Tiley is the tournament director. He said he hopes those players will be able to do their best in a tough situation. We've got to do whatever we can to make it as fair as possible. I'm Dan Friedel.
American political leaders are pushing for schools to reopen this winter. As teachers started to receive COVID-19 vaccines. But others are concerned that they may not be ready. Last Thursday, President-elect Joe Biden proposed a $1.9 trillion spending plan to fight the virus in the United States and help the nation's economy. The plan calls for a national vaccine plan to administer 100 million shots in the first 100 days of his administration. The incoming president added, there will be money to safely reopen a majority of kindergarten to eighth grade schools in the first 100 days. Governor Gavin Newsom of California proposed a $2 billion plan to pay for testing, protective equipment, and other safety measures to reopen the lowest grades as soon as February 16th. In Ohio, Governor Mike DeWine offered to vaccinate teachers in February if the schools agree to have in-person teaching by March 1st. In Arizona, where teachers started receiving shots this month, Governor Doug Ducey said he expects students will return to the classroom soon. The money will not go to schools that remain closed in Arizona. Children still need to learn, even in a pandemic, he said.
Arizona's education officials and hospital leaders, however, disagree with the governor. They warned that the state has the highest rate of COVID-19 infection in the nation. Johns Hopkins University reported, as of January 19th, the U.S. has experienced 390,000 COVID-19-related deaths and more than 23 million confirmed infections. Michael White is a doctor at Valleywise Health in Phoenix, Arizona. He said, "We understand that learning and bringing our children together is very important. But to reduce the spread of the virus," he said, "children should not be outside of their family group." Last week, officials in Chicago, Illinois, began a slow reopening with the youngest students. Since teachers have yet to receive vaccines, officials are providing them virus tests on school grounds. but some teachers refused to return because of COVID-19 concerns. Kirsten Roberts is a pre-kindergarten teacher in Chicago. She told the Associated Press, "I don't believe it's safe to reopen the schools. I don't believe it's safe for my family. I don't believe it is safe for the city's children or their families." Jeff Freitas is president of the California Federation of Teachers. The labor leader said, "Vaccinations have to come first, then schools in California can talk about reopening."
California has only vaccinated healthcare workers and people in nursing homes so far. Utah is one of the first states to vaccinate teachers over other groups. Governor Spencer Cox has said he wants to vaccinate all teachers by the end of February. Michael Crookston is a music teacher at Davis High School in Salt Lake City, Utah. He said the COVID-19 vaccine has been a thing I've been looking forward to, a little bit like Christmas. I'm Armin Kasabian.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. After the end of World War I, President Woodrow Wilson sought national support for his idea of a League of Nations. He took his appeal directly to the American people in the summer of 1919. Tony Riggs and Frank Oliver continue the story of Wilson's campaign.
The plan for the League of Nations was part of the peace treaty that ended World War I. By law, the United States Senate would have to vote on the treaty. President Wilson believed the Senate would have to approve it if the American people demanded it. So he went to the people for support. For almost a month, Wilson traveled across America. He stopped in many places to speak about the need for the League of Nations. He said the League was the only hope for world peace. It was the only way to prevent another world war. Wilson's health grew worse during the long journey across the country. He became increasingly weak and suffered from severe headaches. In Wichita, Kansas, he had a small stroke. A blood vessel burst inside his brain. He was forced to return to Washington.
For a few days, President Wilson's condition improved. Then, his wife found him lying unconscious on the floor of his bedroom in the White House. Wilson had lost all feeling in the left side of his body. He was near death. The president's advisors kept his condition secret from almost everyone. They told reporters only that Wilson was suffering from a nervous breakdown. For the next few days, the medical reports from the White House were always the same. They said Mr. Wilson's condition had not changed. People began to wonder, were they being told the truth? Some people began to believe that the president was, in fact, dead. Vice President Thomas Marshall was worried. If the president died or could not govern, then he, Marshall, would become president. But even Vice President Marshall could get no information from Wilson's doctors.
After several weeks, the president seemed to get a little stronger. He was still very weak. He could not work except to sign several bills. This simple act took most of his strength. Wilson's wife, Edith, guarded her husband closely. She alone decided who could see him. She alone decided what information he could receive. All letters and messages to Woodrow Wilson were given first to Edith Wilson. She decided if they were important enough for him to see. Most, she decided, were not. She also prevented members of the cabinet and other government officials from communicating with him directly. Mrs. Wilson's actions made many people suspect that she, not her husband, was governing the country. Some spoke of her as the nation's first woman president.
There was one issue Mrs. Wilson did discuss with her husband, the League of Nations. The Senate was completing debate on the Treaty of Versailles. That was the World War I peace agreement that contained Wilson's plan for the League. It seemed clear the Senate would reject the treaty. Too many senators feared the United States would lose some of its independence and freedom if it joined the League. The leader of Wilson's political party in the Senate, Gilbert Hitchcock, headed the administration campaign to win support for the treaty. He received Mrs. Wilson's permission to visit her husband. Hitchcock told the president the situation was hopeless. He said the Senate would not approve the treaty unless several changes were made to protect American independence. If the president accepted the changes, then the treaty might pass.
Wilson refused. He would accept no compromise. He said the treaty must be approved as written. Senator Hitchcock made one more attempt to get Wilson to reconsider. On the day the Senate planned to vote on the treaty, he went back to the White House. He told Mrs. Wilson that compromise offered the only hope for success. Mrs. Wilson went into the president's room while Hitchcock waited. She asked her husband, "Will you not accept the changes and get this thing settled?" He answered, "I cannot. Better 1,000 times to go down fighting than to surrender to dishonorable compromise."
The Senate voted. Hitchcock's fears proved correct. The treaty was defeated. The defeat ended Wilson's dream of American membership in the League of Nations. Mrs. Wilson gave the news to her husband. He was silent for a long time. Then he said, "I must get well." Woodrow Wilson was extremely sick, yet he was not the kind of man who accepted opposition or defeat easily. From his sickbed, he wrote a letter to the other members of the Democratic Party. He urged them to continue debate on the League of Nations. He said a majority of Americans wanted the treaty approved. Wilson probably was correct about this. Most Americans did approve of membership in the League of Nations. But they also wanted to be sure membership would not restrict American independence.
The Senate Foreign Relations Committee agreed to reopen discussion on the treaty. It searched yet again for a compromise. It made new efforts to get Wilson to accept some changes. But, as before, Wilson refused. He was a proud man, and he thought many of the senators were evil men trying to destroy his plan for international peace. Wilson's unwillingness to compromise helped kill the treaty once and for all. The Senate finally voted again, and the treaty was defeated by 7 votes. The treaty was dead. The United States would never enter the League of Nations. And one of the most emotional and personal stories in the making of the American nation had ended.
The long battle over the Treaty of Versailles ended with political defeat for Woodrow Wilson. Yet, history would prove him correct. Wilson had warned time and again during the debate that a terrible war would result if the world did not come together to protect the peace. 20 years later, war came. The First World War had been called the war to end all wars, but it was not, and the Second World War would be far more destructive than the first.
The debate over the Treaty of Versailles was the central issue in American politics during the end of Woodrow Wilson's administration. It also played a major part in the presidential election of 1920. Wilson himself could not be a candidate again. He was much too sick. So the Democratic Party nominated a former governor of Ohio, James Cox. Cox shared Wilson's opinion that the United States should join the League of Nations. He campaigned actively for American membership. The Republican Party chose Senator Warren Harding as its candidate for president. Harding campaigned by promising a return to what he called normal times. He said it was time for America to stop arguing about international events and start thinking about itself again.
The two presidential candidates gave the American people a clear choice in the election of 1920. On one side was Democrat James Cox. He represented the dream of Woodrow Wilson. In this dream, the world would be at peace, and America would be a world leader that would fight for the freedom and human rights of people everywhere. On the other side was Republican Warren Harding. He represented an inward-looking America. It was an America that felt it had sacrificed enough for other people. Now, it would deal with its own problems. Warren Harding won the election.
The results of the election shocked and hurt Woodrow Wilson. He could not understand why the people had turned from him and his dream of international unity and peace. But the fact was that America was entering a new period in its history. For a long time, it would turn its energy away from the world beyond its borders.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.